Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When we decided to come to Shetland, I got in touch with Chris Drever and said, who would be the best person to tell us about the musical traditions of these islands? And he said, this is his email, Maurice Henderson is the real deal, traditional fiddler, member of the great band Fiddler's Bid, and absolutely fascinating, an expert on Shetlandic folklore and the music that's completely intertwined with it. He basically knows everything, and he's an excellent speaker and fiddler. So we've got to go and see Maurice, haven't we? And then when we got in touch with Maurice, he said, could I bring my friend Ewan Thompson, who's part of a family from Fair Isle that includes Inga Thompson, who you might have heard singing with Northern Flyway or with Corinne Polwart. So we said, yes, of course. And Ewan Thompson is a luthier. He's a man who makes fiddles. So he makes the fiddles that these traditional tunes are performed on. And we're going to go and visit his workshop now. Maurice, hello. Ewan, hello.
Hello.
What an amazing day, first of all. The sun is out.
Yeah, it's
hasn't been out all day, though, has
great
it?
Great to see the sun, yeah. Just hit it right here, down in Chanarwick.
Good time, yeah. It's raining all bits of the morning. It was raining, so cleared up now.
It's the four seasons in one day thing, isn't it? You get a big change here. But
that.
We're standing outside your house, Ewan, yeah. And we're looking out to sea, and we're in a kind of lee of the hill in a bay.
Yeah.
With a ship moored at anchor out there. Do you know what the ship is?
I believe it's a research ship.
All right, okay.
I'm not sure.
And what are these buildings that are surrounding us here?
The house is here. We've got a greenhouse in the bottom of the garden. And then we've got a small shed where I build instruments in the shed there.
To build instruments in there. And people from all over the world want your violins, don't they?
Yeah, I suppose that's...
I know you're a modest
I've not been found out yet.
You're a modest man, but they don't they?
They've gone over the place. You've done your research.
Where's the furthest one's gone?
Australia, I guess, is the furthest.
Right, and these folk musicians or classical musicians?
Mostly folk music. Different genres, yeah. Genres.
And are you from here yourself, from this part of the islands?
No, I'm originally from Fair Isle, which is basically between Sumbra, where you landed, and Orkney, halfway between Orkney
and Shetland. So further down south from here, we're sort of halfway up, aren't we?
Yeah.
Maurice, tell us about the geography of the Shetland Islands, because there's a lot of islands, aren't there?
Yeah, and Ewan mentioned Fair Isle there, it's the more southerly one, and that's what, about 24 miles south of Sumbra Head, where the airport is at the south end, and then you drive up through the mainland, Lerwick is about 26 miles north of there, so that's kind of the central bit of Shetland. You have Lerwick, the main town's about 8,000 people, and Scalloway on the west, the ancient capital, the smaller village. And then, as you say, there are scattered islands. You head up the east coast, you've got uninhabited island of Moussa with the famous Broch on there.
Do you Just and a brock is a round house, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about 2,000 years old. And then you head north, you've got Bressy and Noss. Noss is famous for its seabird colony there. And then heading north, you've got Whalsey, which is a well-known island for its fishing industry there. Yeah. And then Outskerries is a small group of islands there, maybe 30 people living there. Yeah. Then you're up to Fettler, the Garden of Shetland, they call it. That's where my family, so a lot of them are from there. From. And then we've got Yell and Unst, most northerly everything there, most northerly bus shelter and most northerly post office. And yeah, it's a lighthouse, of course, in Muckle Flugga.
As soon as I got here, I was aware of history, and I feel like it's a place that just goes back thousands of years. I mean, you know, the Norse and the Viking influence, of course, but before that as well, you've got human habitation.
You'll hear, or you'll see it in a lot of the place names, the Norse, but there's also names here even older, the time maybe from the Picts, and there's a settlement called Jarlsoff, archaeological site, and you can go right back to about 4,500 years there, and the settlements on that same site all the way up to about the 17th century. So yeah, you can see all the eras in one place there.
And the musical tradition goes back a long way too, doesn't it?
Yeah, we've got I was thinking some of the really old tunes, then they kind of say they might have influence on the Norse side of things. There's old tunes like the Day Dawn, they're quite well known. And then you've got influences coming in with the fiddle arriving probably 350 years ago, folk bringing them back from sea, and became very popular. And we've got this tradition with the reels, Shetland reels, and that kind of, I suppose, took over from the old Muckle reels and some of that older style of music. And today, even as things move on, you get styles change and more Scottish influences, and then we're hearing fiddlers from all over the place, and there's folk composing tunes all the time, and yeah, it's quite a vibrant scene.
I want to go inside the workshop and see some of your fiddles, Ewan. Is that all right?
It's no bother at all.
I know. Also, I'd really like you guys to play for us in there as well, if you wouldn't mind. Would you do
that?
Okay, let's walk down. The first thing to say is that it must be wonderful to work looking out through this window at the sea and the view here.
Yeah, it's a distraction. I have to be careful. You can see there's sheets over the windows, so I can block them out when I'm working.
Oh, right, so that stops you from glazing over and just looking out to sea, does it?
Well, to be honest, it's just so I can control the light for working that.
Yeah, so you've got four windows, and at least three of them look out over the sea, which is magnificent. And then you've got here on the workbench, there's a work in progress, is there?
Yeah. It's probably just past halfway through, and I'll take it out of the jig. I've got a jig there for working on it. So I've finished the outside arching there.
And that's the back of the violin?
This is the back here, and then I'm just hollowing out and thicknessing the...
What sort of wood are you using?
This is maple. The back, ribs, neck are maple, and the front there is spruce. This plywood here is the mould.
Ah.
And the ribs are bent round the mould. They're steamed and bent round the mould and glued onto these blocks there.
And how long does the process take?
For violin, probably about 5 weeks for the woodwork, if you're doing nothing else.
And then you have to add the neck and the scrolls and...
Well, the neck's carved. I have
it. Just over here?
An early stage. So that's just roughed out, ready to start carving now. So I'll have a week's work to do on this probably.
Right, and do you do that... How do you do that, with a chisel or...
It's gouges. You see me gouge the rolls there on the table there.
So. Oh, yes, your tools are over there on the rack. So that's carefully hand chiseled to make the shape.
It's all hand carved, yeah. It's just carved out.
And as you're doing this, are you thinking about the sound that the violin will make?
That's the most important thing, yeah. That's the main focus.
And can you, as a result of the process, the handwork that you do, can you dictate whether it's a loud violin or a gentle sound? Or...
Yeah, you can make a violin with whichever sound you're after in mind. It's not an exact science, but you can certainly make a higher arching and get a louder sound. And at the end, with the setup, with the sound post and the bridge, that can be altered. It's just years of experience, I guess. It's only been it's a trial.
Well, which prompts me to ask you how you first started. I mean, what has this been in your family, this kind of work, or
craft? Certainly, yeah. My grandfather played the fiddle, and he taught me from a young age. My dad's a musician as well, and they've both always done woodwork. My dad makes straw back chairs, and my grandfather made spinning wheels.
Spinning wheels. Was he quite famous for his spinning wheels?
Not so much. It was more a hobby. In his retirement, and I think when he retired, he's sadly no longer with us, but when he retired, I think he made over 200 spinning wheels just in his retirement.
Wow.
I think it's a Shetland trade. I think folk needed to be able to be practical and make things and fix stuff, and I think that's not unique to my family. I think that's a general trait of Shetland folk, I would say.
And there's a lot of fiddle players here, presumably.
There's a lot for the population. I would say there's probably quite a high number of fiddle players.
Yeah, so there's quite a bit of demand, at least even here in Shetland, before they start going abroad.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, there's a lot of local players play your fiddles, Ewan. Most of the guys with fiddlers bid, Andrew Gifford and Kevin Henderson and Chris Stout, they all play Ewan fiddles and Ross Cooper. And there's more than that. There's a lot of...
What about you, Morris? Do you play a Ewan fiddle?
No, I don't actually.
Hang on a minute.
Morris,
why not?
I know. Yeah, I'm best salesman for Ewan, but I play one of my dad's fiddles. So
Dad made fiddles?
Yeah, he's as a hobby. Yeah, so he started that just as a hobby a lot of years ago.
But you're not offended, Ewan?
Took it to quite a high level. I mean, he says it's a hobby, but he's making nice instruments, yeah.
Yeah, he makes good fiddles. He never gets a chance to sell any because they're always the family that are after them.
But you've been making a fiddle yourself, Morris, haven't you?
Yeah, that was just this last year. I thought I'd have a go at it. And since the music scene was extra quiet for the last year... So
during the lockdown?
Yeah, the lockdown. I started just before Christmas and managed to get it set up in the white. So it's not varnished yet. But
is it here?
I do, yeah, I actually have it here.
Would you play it for us?
I could, yeah. Apparently the master craftsman over there. This is.
You're slightly embarrassed to take yours out.
Yeah, this is not...
Well, we'll get Ewan to review it in a moment that's... and tell us what he thinks of your handiwork.
He's a very good fellow to... He gave me some advice as well as going along. Keep encouragement, I think.
How was he as an apprentice, Ewan?
He's good. He's done good. Yeah, he's done good.
Well, it looks fantastic. Now, it's not varnished yet, so it's...
No, it's still in the white.
In the white wood. But it's beautifully made, I must say.
Well,
he's not done a bad job here,
is he? No, he's done a great job, and it's nicely marked around the inlay, around the edge.
And that's my first attempt at that, so it's a... I learnt a lot every step of the way.
Was it frustrating sometimes?
No, I actually just really enjoyed working away at it.
Uh-huh.
Back in the workshop, there's not a fiddle being made now, and it feels a bit empty. I'll need to go and maybe think of another one for another winter.
Well, let's hear what it sounds like. Tell you what, if you make something that sounds like that, you should be very satisfied with yourself. It's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah,
what do you think, Ewan? Give us marks out of 10.
It's got to be a 9, isn't it?
Since he's standing here.
He's very generous. He's not varnished. He's not varnished.
No, varnished
yet.
No.
Difference does the varnish make when you put it on? Does it make a big difference to the sound?
It certainly focuses the sound,
right.
It draws it in and focuses the sound, definitely.
Yeah, so playing it without the varnish, you know, we're only hearing nine-tenths of the picture.
Yeah, it's a more open...
it's a bit of a raw sound and maybe a bit more of a boomy sound.
You
get probably a bit more variety in the sound, so kind of more detail in the sound with the varnish on. At least I hope so, anyway.
Now listen, you kindly said that you would play some tunes for us.
Well, we thought we'd play a couple of old Fettler tunes.
What's a Fettler tune?
Well, from the island of Fettler. The first one is a Trowie tune.
And what's a Trowie?
Well, it's actually a Trowie tune coming from the Trows.
And a Trow is a kind of troll?
Exactly right, yeah. They're smaller than a troll, though. We call them the Piri Folk or the Grey Folk. They bide in the hills in Shetland. And they love playing the fiddle and playing tricks on people. Some of them are not so nice. They have to be careful how you deal with the trouts.
Do they not kidnap the fiddle players sometimes?
Quite often, yeah.
And take them away?
There's many a fiddler disappeared for a long while and then maybe only appear back a year later. Even 100 years it's been...
And told his wife that the trousers would take them.
Exactly. It happens a lot, yeah.
Right.
And they sometimes come back with tunes that they've learnt from the trous. And there is a repertoire of tunes in the Shetland fiddle tradition that have been learnt from the trous. And you can nearly tell, oh, that's a trowy tune. They just have a certain sound. This one, called Winya Depla, it's a famous trowy tune from Fettler. And it was heard by a man who was grinding corn in his mill, a stone water mill. And he was the only one brave enough to do the night shift out there and grind the corn at maybe 1 a.m. when the trous were at their most mischievous and the worst. And these trous had borrowed a boat and rowed across the Wicca Grootin in Fettler. And they were heading to a wedding party up on the hill. And en route they came up the burn and they came across the mill. And they thought, oh, they could see the mill was going full tilt. They could hear it grinding the corn. And they burst in the door to see Gibby Lawrenson in there. Now, he had heard them approaching, and he was pretending to be asleep. And he had around him all this hallows of straw to keep him warm. And he pretended to be asleep, and the trous were discussing what they were going to do to the sleeper. And at that, there was a trowy woman that came in, and she had a big bundle of wet washing. She'd been washing in the burn. And she said, leave him be. She started to lay these wet cloths over his leg to dry. It was actually the hippings or the bairn's nappies. And she laid them out to dry. And because she was pretending to be asleep all the time. And she says, you leave him be. The sleeper is doing a very good job of drying my washing. Why do you not play him a tune? And the trow fiddler had this, what they called it, they had the trowy fiddle with a couple of horsehair type strings on it. And he played this tune. And Gibby wasn't a fiddler himself, but he was a good singer. And he got the melody. And when he went home, he got his son to play it on the fiddle. So they called it Feather's Tune for long, but then eventually they called it Winya Depla, after the loch, which is up in the hill behind there. And a place, if you go there as a Shetland fiddler, you should be beware.
The trous.
The trous.
Could get you.
Yeah. So I'll play you that tune, I think.
Oh, that would be fantastic. Thank you. Thank you, thank you. Yes. So that was this, there was a second tune there, wasn't there? What was that one?
Yeah, went into a Fettler reel called Hjógrafvelta. That's an old one, that from the playing of David Hart. And he was a fiddler probably in the, you're talking mid-19th century, and a fisherman and whaler and the like, and he was a noted fiddler, so it came down from him. Whether he he wrote it or he just played it. He was noted to play it.
And with some of these songs, is it lost in the mists of time, whether they're traditional or whether somebody actually composed them?
Yeah, they're tunes like that, you don't know where they came from originally, but it certainly got a Fettler sound to it, I would say. And handed down through the Hart family in Fettler. And then my neighbour, the late Joe Jimison, he was about 90 and a great fiddle player. I spent many a night in along him. And he always, that was like his signature tune to me, the kind of Chiogra Vulta, and to come down through his family.
What about you and your family history? Because we've heard Ewan's. So does fiddle playing run in the family?
Well, my dad was learning the fiddle and playing the fiddle.
When you were a kid?
Yeah, and he could turn a tune on the fiddle pretty good. And then he took into the interest in making the fiddles. And my mother, she played piano. Mostly kind of classical piano, and her family all played piano, so there's kind of music on that side as well. And we'd have many a session in the house there when I was growing up, because we didn't live too far away from the lounge bar in Lerwick, which is a famous place for sessions. And quite often at that times then the pubs shut a lot earlier, back at 10 at night, and then folk would come back along and have a tune, because we had a piano in the house. I would come sneaking, looking down the stairs, see who was in, and the music would be playing away.
So you sat on the stairs taking it all in, did you?
Oh, yeah, and we listened to music in the house all the time, all sorts. So, yeah, I think we were exposed to a lot of good tunes. And
so what sort of music players were you listening to?
Well, on the record player and that, it was anything for health. Obviously fiddle music and Shetland stuff, but also classical music, a lot of that, and whatever the latest hits of the day were, probably. But,
when did you first pick up a fiddle?
I was interested in it when I was about maybe 10 or 11, and I figured out a couple of tunes on it, the Merry Boys of Greenland, and then at the school I got a chance, I actually wrote about it in a history lesson, we did an essay, and at the end I'd said, oh, and at some time I'd like to learn a fiddle, and it was actually my history teacher who picked up on it. And he said to me, Dad, oh, your boy wrote this thing. I could get him fiddle lessons at the school. So that's why I got lessons at school with Trevor Hunter.
And when you have those kind of lessons, are they lessons in Shetland fiddle playing, or are they classical lessons? Or
Shetland fiddle playing. Predominantly, you learnt the kind of repertoire of Shetland tunes, but also taught you technique. And Trevor was quite into the classical stuff as well. So you learnt about producing the tone and Scottish, Irish, and anything you wanted to learn.
Oh, did you enjoy it all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed playing. And there's a few teachers at the school at the time, Willie Hunter, the late Willie Hunter. He was in the next door room teaching my sister, had lessons with him. So he would be picking up tunes from them. And the teachers were all very inspiring. They were coming with new material they were learning. And you would go away and try and learn it up.
And you had a band right from school days as well.
Yeah, we had a band together. There's boys about my age, and they were really good fiddle players, and we ended up getting a group together. We started playing it just, it might be a folk society night or a little concert. Somebody was needing a fiddle band, or the band couldn't turn up. They would get us to come and play some tunes, and then we ended up forming a band called Fiddler's Bid.
So oh, yes, famous.
We've been going for a while now.
Yes. When was that? When did
that
it start?
That would have been 91. I would have been about 15, 16.
Right.
And the other boys were about a couple of years younger than me, some of them. We'd play at the Fiddle and Accordion Club and maybe at a folk club. And then the Shetland Folk Festival, 92, we did our first performance there. And it was a major thing. And you're suddenly sharing the bill with international artists and stuff. And there's no question that spurred you on something else. And you were joining in sessions the whole time.
And you played across the planet since then.
You've been everywhere now, haven't you? A lot of places, over the years.
The Sundowner concert at Sydney Opera House.
Wow. I'll tell you what, you know, I'm looking out over your shoulder here at this view, and I wonder if we might step out into the view and get you to play some tunes on the beach down there. Would that be great.
It would
be fantastic. All right, let's do that. So here we are down on the beach. Yeah, and I can see there's sand down there, and there's a lot of pebbles that have been washed up here. Do you get some quite powerful storms here?
We get some serious gales here in the wintertime. It's unbelievable. I think there's one day around Christmas time, that's a lot of years ago, I think I found about 30 35 aulics here on the beach, wash shop, fish wash shop on the beach here.
Oh my goodness.
So it kept us fed for the whole winter. We took them back and
that's fantastic.
And we got them all in the freezer for the winter. But,
and the wind comes in really strongly.
Yeah, serious. We get serious wind here. I mean, we would not be standing here. We'd be even on the grass at the bank there. The sea goes right up over the grass, and it took the gable end off the old kirk there, the meeting house there.
Oh, really? So the waves are that high? That there's a ruined building there that they pulled down?
Yeah.
My goodness. Because it looks like butter wouldn't melt in its mouth today, doesn't it?
Isn't
you know,
it?
The sun's out, there's a little gentle breeze, and the waves are lapping on the shore.
Yeah, oh. It's very different when the wind's westerly today, but when you get easterly coming in here, it's different.
And some wonderful bird life here too?
There's some fantastic wildlife here, yeah, all aspects, yeah.
What sort of things can you see?
Well, there'll be ring plovers here on the beach nesting just now. Terns over the far end there, there's Arctic terns nesting there. Oyster catchers, what we call the shelder have been nesting here on the beach. There's lots of waders. There's mallard, eider duck as well.
And do you see birds. Seals and whales here?
I'd be surprised if we can't see a seal here somewhere just now. If we look for a minute, we'll see a seal, I'm sure.
You do get the whales quite regular, fairly
whales
regular.
Whales come in. Through the summertime, we get killer whales quite a lot.
Minke
whales.
We see
dolphins, we see odd minke. Did see humpback whales out here one time. That was a good sight.
Was there a whaling industry here on Shetland?
There was for a short while, yeah. I mean, before 1900 or so, then they had can whales, with pilot whales. They would car them into a bow, but that's long since finished here. But yeah, they did have a whaling industry, and the Norwegians, I think, had a company here in the early 20th century. But it was fairly short-lived, that one. But a lot of Shetlanders did go to the whaling in the past.
To other countries?
Yeah, to the Arctic and South Georgia. So that, at one time in the 40s, 50s and so on, then that was a major employer. Lots of folk would go in winter out down there, and there wasn't that many sources of employment in Shetland, so it actually kept the folk here, and they would get enough money to maybe build a house or kind of keep the family going. But that finished in the early 60s, thankfully. So the whales are slowly making some kind of a comeback, but it's pretty much a struggle.
And now, presumably, you get people coming with who want to shoot them with their cameras rather
more
than
now,
anything
more,
else.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell almost sometimes you know there's a whale off the shore because there'll be 15, 20 cars jammed in the corner of the road somewhere and folk running down to the shore with cameras and binoculars. There's certainly an attraction here. There's certainly
there's
an attraction.
Real enthusiasts, and they know all the whales to see by their fins. They're all very individual, and they'll track these pods. Maybe they'll be observed somewhere in the north of Scotland or down the west coast, and they might visit here, and we get ones from Iceland that'll appear here. And
they have names.
They know them. And they'll say, oh, this one visited here maybe 5 years ago, and here they've returned with a pod. So, they're really getting a good knowledge. And the poor old seals, they don't get such a good time because they do come around here hunting.
Yeah. That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if you'd play for us again. We're on the beach here. Where's a good place to stand? Shall we move down onto the sand?
Yeah, we could go down a bit. Yeah. Shetland really was danced for a couple of hundred years, and that was really the only dance they did. It was the most popular one, and it's ideal because it can be danced in your sitting room, in a small room. You don't need a hall to dance it in, or you could dance it down here on the beach perfectly good, I'm sure, but you get the sound of the feet on the floorboards is splendid. And if you actually play in the real the bit when they do the figure eight, you hear the shuffle of the feet, and that blends in with the tune and provides a rhythm. So it's great to play along with the dancers. And then when you lift into the back step and they're getting the hughs and the kind, then that just lifts the musicians as well.
So they'll cry out?
Yeah, oh yeah, they'll just be a yelp for the floor and encouragement and maybe asking for another turn again. And yeah, so that kind of, when you get that interaction with the dancers, it's really incredible and just brings another dimension to the real life.
Coming in there at the end of your playing was fantastic. So that was a set of Shetland reels, and obviously I felt the urge to dance while you were playing. But what should I have done if I were dancing the Shetland reel, and would it be the same all over the island?
Well, that's it. Yeah, the Shetland reel, ideally you'd have three couples, line up three couples, and then you would do like a figure of eight movement through, and the first half of the tune, and then the second half of the tune you would do either a back step or a shuffle step. So that's generally the form for the dance.
But did they dance it the same everywhere on the island?
No, there's variations wherever you go, and that may be some that do the back step, and then particularly if you go to Skerries, or that they would do a shuffle, and some places they start with the step dance first, and other places it'll be the figure of eight first. So there are variations wherever you go. Same in the music.
And have you spent time sort of studying the different variations?
Well, maybe not so much as a dancer, but I have, yeah, I've spoken to a lot of dancers about it. And I can do a back step right enough, and I might manage that, but the falter shuffle would be too much for me.
But is it
some... You've tried to stop it from dying out, actually. Morris has been trying to keep it alive.
Yeah, it'd be good to see it danced more, because, yeah. I mean, the reels, there's hundreds of fiddle players, and you know all the tunes, but you don't get to match it up with the dance so often, yeah. And I think a lot of it's fashion. There are a lot of folk like their dancing, and there's various dance clubs throughout Shetland that meet regularly. There's one just over the hill here in Sandwick and Hussock. Carnegie Hall is what they meet there.
Yeah.
But there's other ones as well. And you dance at weddings, and maybe after a concert sometimes you get a dance. Or if, say, we're out in Fuller, we maybe go and visit there. They always dance the Shalds. They have the Fuller reel out there, which is a different dance again, and we play jigs for that. But, yeah, the folk will always like to do a dance.
So, Morris, can you just demonstrate for us on this rock on the beach here
how
I would do the backstep?
Yeah, so let me see.
Okay.
Just like that.
So you're putting one foot behind the other and
hopping. You kind of hop twice, yeah.
Yeah. Come on then,
so
I'll have a go.
You have a go on.
Yeah, I'll have a go. So I'll hop on that one. Is that it? No. Oh, I've lost it altogether now. Morris is absolutely wetting himself laughing at me. What have you found there, Ewan?
This is the Fumer petrel
skeleton
here. They have this like a tube there that they shoot oil over. If you get too close, they'll spray with oil.
That's how they defend themselves from predators.
That's a defense mechanism, yeah.
And you found the skeleton here. Obviously, one of them's died.
It's obviously washed
on
up
the beach.
I guess.
Yeah,
it's come up a couple up on the beach, but.
But are there lots of them nesting nearby?
There's ones along the head of the beach up here, yeah. There's quite a few nesting, sitting on eggs there. But, and Morris is saying that the name, do you say the name?
The Mallee. We call them Mallees, yeah. That's the Shetland name. Most of the birds will have a Shetland name.
I mean, is there a whole other Shetland language going on? You know, we're speaking English now, obviously, but I saw in the local bookshop there was a book of Shetland words, which is a very big book.
Yeah.
So are there people who still speak that?
Yeah, there's a lot of Shetland words, and sometimes you don't realise it, but we use a lot of different words. And
some areas are broader than others. I think some areas of Shetland, there's a much broader tongue.
Yeah, there's local accents and dialects even across the islands. Just going a few miles away, you can tell somebody's from a different island. It's that distinct.
Yeah.
And do you think that survives, you know, even in modern communication times? Because often I've read about accents disappearing because people are all watching the same American films, or they're all listening to the same radio stations, or, you know, whatever. But it's distinct here because maybe people are still, you know, in their separate communities.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, you hear a difference, a change. If you came to Shetland 30, 40 years ago, you would hear a different slant. And, yeah, just as you're saying, influences from outside, but there's still, you can tell folk, they're from the west side of Shetland, or from Unst or Walsa.
And I think the younger folk now are finding it more fashionable, actually, to use more Shetland words and more dialect now, and that's a good thing.
They're keeping that language alive.
I think they are now. It's definitely my daughter's generation, they're certainly using more Shetland words.
And how do they learn that? Is that because they pick it up from you, or do they get taught them at school, or do they get them from each other?
You just really pick it up.
And
usually the older generation, the grandparents, that would be the best source, older.
And you see that if your friends are online or you're messaging, a lot of folk message each other, it's all in Shetland dialect, and speaking on Messenger or whatever, they'll always speak, and you can tell where they're from, even by how they write it. And it's kind of just written phonetically.
And that's fantastic that language is being used in the modern electronic world, isn't it? You know, that's a sign that it's going to survive and thrive.
Well, I think it's quite a good way because it's quite short. A lot of the words are quite short, and it's an easier way to write it sometimes.
Like, what kind of words? Can you give us some examples?
Well, what kind of words would you...
You were saying the other day it was foos do.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
How are you today, I suppose, how are you doing there?
If you had a good meal, you'd just be stented. That'd be the word, you'd just be stented.
Stented?
Oh, yeah.
Stented. That's quite descriptive, isn't it, actually?
There's been a lot of these nights with the mist coming down at night. When it lies down in the valleys, we call it the Dalarik.
Dalarik?
Yeah, the smoke, like in the valley, in the dal.
I mean, cows are kai.
I think I've heard that in Northumberland as well. Yeah, the kai, yeah.
And that's the terrics.
Yeah, terrics here. It's the Arctic tern.
That's another word for them.
Yeah.
Well, I'm learning.
And you'll hear folk will say, well, when will I meet you? I'll meet you in a piri start.
Yeah.
A piri start.
Yeah, in a little while. But you folk look at you blankly, a piri start? What's that?
That's great. And piri is little, is it?
Yeah. So I'd see you in a piri start.
I'm going to try that.
This steam, that we call that a bully steam.
That's a pebble.
It's a pebble, yeah, bully steam.
And is steam like stone?
Stone, yeah, just bully steam, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of the words is quite almost like Norwegian. Somebody who's a kind of linguist would understand, but how you phrase words, you almost say it the opposite way around.
So if you're going to say hurry up, I think you'd say come trow. And I think that's exactly the same, isn't it? In some parts of Norway, I think that's the same. Mm. Come trow.
Some of my friends in Norway, they say when they hear us speaking to each other in Shetland dialect, they say it's your sounds like Norwegian.
And the birds are speaking to us as well. What's that? Yeah. What kind of bird is that?
That's a terek. That's one of the tereks that we're looking at.
Yeah, so they just arrived back not long ago, and they're probably starting to nest now, but when they're actually on the nest, they'll attack you.
Well, we might end up with being dive-bombed yet. We're just going to wander over to the end of the beach here, so we might end up getting dive-bombed by that.
Okay, well, let's just walk carefully this way.
What have we got here?
Look at that, yeah. Oh, some eggs.
That was
here on the sand. So you and what are those?
I'm not sure, because they're dark green. They could be red shank. I'm not
just
sure.
Right here in amongst the stones, and yeah, very well camouflaged,
so
aren't
camouflaged.
They? Unfortunately, we didn't step on them.
Yeah, I think we'll keep moving.
Yeah, let's go away in case the mother wants to come back to her nest. Yeah. So, Ewan, we're coming through the gate onto your croft now, are we?
Yeah, this is our hay park in here. And then there's a few crops up here. There's some Shetland oats, which is a lighter green strip there. And then there's some Neep's turnips, and then some Shetland kale, which is cabbage. Shetland kale.
Is it quite hard to grow things here because the wind is quite extreme and it's very exposed? I should say I haven't yet seen a tree.
No.
On Shetland.
There's not many trees around here.
So is it quite hard for your crops to thrive?
We get quite an intense summer here, so stuff grows here very well, actually. But at the beginning and end of the season, I guess, that's where the problems arise sometimes with wind when you're planting and erosion. And then at the end, you can get the storm. Storm will come in and flatten the corn off or flatten the hay even.
And you're growing the hay, presumably, to keep your beasts.
It'll be for fodder.
Through the winter.
For the cows, yeah.
And how many beasts have you got?
We just have the four at the moment. We're fattening up animals, so the ones that will go into the food chain.
And sheep?
We have about 35 sheep. Just
right.
Now.
What variety of sheep do you have?
And the Shetland sheep too.
Of course.
We're on sheep. So yeah, and we'll sell the lambs at the end of the summer.
And wool is so important here, isn't it?
You it's
know,
a big
such
thing.
A big knitting industry.
It's a big part of Shetland.
And the Fair Isle sweater, of course, is very famous.
That's right.
So do your sheep provide wool for that?
Yeah. Our wool will go up to the brokers in Lerwick and then go on to the mill from there.
Carding it and getting it ready for
make it into
knitting.
Yarn for knitting, yeah.
Do you do any knitting yourself?
I can't knit, no, I don't, unfortunately. No, my family do. I mean, my granny, she was unbelievable at knitting. The speed that she could knit was unbelievable. But no, that passed me by, that one, I'm afraid.
And does anyone from Fair Isle wear a Fair Isle sweater, or is that just for the tourists?
Oh, no, folk wear them. Folk
right,
do wear
okay.
them, yeah.
I just wanted to check.
Yeah, no, that's true, yeah, they do. The great thing with the wool, if you get a Fair Isle jumper, it's quite lightweight, even though it's really warm. Yep. So you can wear it through layers.
Uh-huh.
And you never get too hot in it either. It kind of self-regulates, so it's a very good thing to have.
Speaking about the spinning and that, you want to try that Dún na Rús one?
Oh, yes. So, Ewan, tell us about this tune and the rhythm of it.
The tune is in 21/8 timing, which is similar to the sound that the spinning wheel makes when you're spinning the wool, the Shetland wool.
So the tune responds to that rhythm.
Yeah, and it's similar.
Do you play it to the people who are spinning sometimes to keep them in time? Or?
Well, Morris played it to me, grandfather, and he played it when he spun.
I asked Ewan's grandfather, because it's an Unst tune, and he was originated in Unst and learned it from his uncle. And he said that there's supposed to be the sound of the wheel going, the rhythm. He says, can you play the tune then along with it? And then he just set the wheel going and played the fiddle at the same time.
Oh, did
so he could actually do the both at the one time.
Doing his own accompaniment.
And he really, because he was really in tune with the spinning, really knew how to spin, and he got the rhythm amazing through that. So it can be done.
That
yes.
must have been fantastic to see.
Oh, yeah. Incredible to see and hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we played a kind of a more fired up version of it.
Yeah, it's a faster kind of version, I guess, yeah.
We've come down now by this lovely burn. You can probably hear the water trickling past. And what better place to hear Morris and Ewan playing than on the banks of the burn? You have to be fast to spin to that, don't you? You have to move fast. That was brilliant. Thank you very much. What a wonderful, wonderful tune.
We went into a couple of tunes there and after the spinning line. Yeah, we would have hit up. My goodness, there would have been some production there, wouldn't there? With the wheel going.
And you've lost a couple of hairs on your bow there, didn't you? Yeah. That's an occupational hazard, presumably, when you're playing.
That's more business for you, and I'll get
there. This is the Shetland oats, is it?
Oh, yeah, we've got the oats over here.
There's not many folk grow the Shetland ones. Scots, it's a much heavier stalk and heavier seed as well, actually. There's more food value, I guess, in the Scots oat. But the Shetland oat, it's incredibly diverse. It can grow on the poorest ground.
Is this for your porridge in the morning, or is it for your sheep?
This will be going for the animals. The cows will eat this probably in the winter.
Right.
We're hoping to make some skecklers with them. Yeah. If we get a good crop, then there's a guising costume that we wear around at New Year time. We know, and again, we've dabbled in the skeckling, but we're going to try and give that a go. There's a lot of interest in it last year in the lockdown.
Yeah. And, so what would the costume look like?
It's like a straw man costume, a straw outfit with a straw hat, pointy hat disguise. And you would go around the houses and you hear the folk approaching the door with the rustle of the straw, and they come in. You have no idea who the folk are. They're quite intimidating.
Because they're disguised completely, their faces hidden.
And with the music going on, and come into the house and you know you've been skeckled because your house will be full of covered in bits of straw.
And what's the history of that? Where's that come from?
It's an old tradition here in Shetland for hundreds of years, and it's a similar thing. You find it in Ireland, and it's almost the same costume, so but nobody really knows where the link. There must be a link somewhere there.
Are they asking for a wee dram when they go in there?
Yeah, that's part of it.
That's how you get rid of it.
Something to eat and something to drink and a dance.
Yeah.
Know your backstep.
But while we're on the subject of this dressing up and all the rest of it, we've got to talk about the fire festival, the Upheli Ar, if that's the correct pronunciation.
Yeah, that's very good.
Which takes place at the end of January, doesn't it?
Yeah, the Upheli Ar, that's a big thing in Shetland. And there's actually 10 festivals throughout Shetland. So you have the main one in Lerwick last Tuesday in January.
Preparation for it goes on all year, doesn't it?
Yeah, folk making costumes and doing an act and rehearsing the act and a lot of social gatherings just before the event.
Right, so. And what would I see if I came and stood in the main street in Lerwick on the night?
The whole place just, within about 30 seconds, the light up is just incredible. And about 1,000 torches are just lit up in
flames.
Flames right through the street, and it just, the whole sky is red, the buildings are glowing. Yeah, it's quite,
and everyone's
and the heat,
dressed in the Viking costumes?
Just, the heat is overwhelming. And the lead squad dressed as Vikings. There's usually about 60 or so Vikings. And then the rest are all in different outfits, and there's about 50 squads all dressed differently. So
It ends up with a longship, doesn't it? A Norse longship going into the sea?
Actually, in Lerwick, they take it into the middle of the town and burn it in the centre of the town in the park there. But some of the other festivals, the one in the South Mainland here, then they burn it in the sea, and they pick a different wick or a different beach every year, depending where the Jarl, the head Viking is from. So everyone has its own way of doing it.
Yeah. And is there a symbolism about that? I mean, is it part of those kind of festivals of light that you see in all sorts of traditions, you know, that it's about the darkness of winter and combating the darkness through light? Is that part of it? Very much,
and I think in Shetland it's such a social thing throughout the year, all ages involved, and it just kind of lightens up the winter and gives you
Something to look forward to.
Every couple of weeks there's another one. You can't go to them all. No. You really can't.
And presumably at that time of year here, it is dark. I mean, how much daylight do you get in January?
You go to your work in the morning and it's dark at about still 9:30, it'll be dark. And then maybe after lunch it's starting to get dark again. Half three it'll be dark. So it is very short.
So you need something to cheer your spirits.
Yeah, that's it. And it's a good time for to keep the music going.
Going to ask you about that. What sort of music will you be playing around that?
Well, if you're in the squads, some of them will have a band even playing or are kind of amplified up, and the other ones will have traditional music, fiddles and guitars and banjos and singing and It's a real mix.
Is there a competitive spirit between the different squads?
There might be some squads trying to get the best act, but there's other ones that really don't take it that serious.
You never let on what you're going as before.
Yeah, that's right.
So what your theme or your costume or whatever, that's just kept
secret till the night.
Keep it under the mat till the night.
And the Jarl squad, the Viking squad, they'll take over a year to make all their costumes, and that's absolutely top secret until the day.
We're now inside the ruins of what used to be a meeting house or a kirk.
Yep.
Obviously the wall's fallen away and we can see through the wall to the sea.
Yeah.
But there's still 3.5 walls here, no roof. What was it like when you first moved here?
The roof had gone when we got here, but the pews were still standing across the kirk here, and the pulpit was still in place at the far end. So that's changed a bit, but you can see how well the stonework has been built. It's unbelievable, the building.
It's beautifully strong, isn't it?
It's unbelievable.
Stone walling.
Yeah.
And what happened to the pews?
I think the sea came in one night, and I find them strewn across the beach. The sea came in a gale one time, and I find them strewn just across the whole.
So the sea would have gone over these walls. And
yeah, but it must have taken this with it, I think.
Taken the side of the wall away and then sucked the pews out onto the beach.
Pulled them out, and there was just bits of pew over the beach. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
But speaking to some of the older folk, they can remember the roof being on and oil lamps hanging from the ceiling.
What an atmospheric place to hear a tune.
Yeah.
So what are you going to play for us now?
Well, we're thinking, since we're down here in this spot in the old kirk, we'll maybe try a more atmospheric tune, a slower tune. This is called the Greenland Man's Tune. So it's,
is there a story behind this one?
It's from the days of the whaling, Greenland whaling, and it's kind of remembered up in Fetlar, if they folk playing it there. Jimsy Lawrenson was a great storyteller for up there, and he used to sing the melody, and it's well known. But it's a lovely atmospheric tune. I'm not sure if they were played it up in the ice, North Ice there, but you can certainly, if you're ever up there among the icebergs and that, it's in the still waters up around Greenland, it certainly suits.
Beautiful, thank you. Listen, Ewan Morris, it's been fantastic to meet you, to have your stories, to see the wonderful place where you live. Thank you so much for joining us on Folk on Foot.
Thank you.
The wonderful Morris Henderson and Ewan Thompson here on Shetland. Well, if you've enjoyed this episode and you love what Folk on Foot does, please consider becoming a patron of the podcast. For a small contribution, you could get great rewards, including access to Folk on Foot on Film, which is our amazing archive of more than 100 songs filmed on location on our travels around the UK. And we've filmed the music that Ewan and Morris have played here today, and we're going to be putting that into the archive, and we keep adding to it as we travel. So if you want to support Folk on Foot, and we rely entirely on contributions from our listeners to keep going, go to folkonfoot.com and click on the Support Us button. We love making this podcast. We hope you love listening to it, and we want to go on making it for as long as possible. So please join us.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.